Okay, now we're ready. Call to order the Rentrum Marietta Community Services District Improvements Committee meeting to order. Item number two, comments from the public, and we have quite a full room this morning. Any comments from the public? Okay. Moving forward, review monthly updates.
All right, heading into the monthly updates on the Retreats East and North project. We haven't heard any word in regards to that. Despite some mutterings that there may be some movement on it several months ago, but we haven't heard anything since. On the Rancho North development project, so as I conveyed last meeting, the Coastland, and you know, that's done the engineering review on the drainage study. There hasn't been any response back from the developer on their comments so far on that. And Coastland is still working on the water and sewer studies. And as I mentioned in the packet here, I have a concern in particular as it related to the water system with the demand of the Rio Oso tank. So I'd like to use the aerial photograph here to kind of give you a brief explanation. So there's an elevation line within the community, which is referred to as the 220-foot elevation line. From above that line, there needs to be a pressurized system. So it used to be through a hydropneumatic tank. Now it's through pumps that are running on a variable frequency drive to maintain the pressure within the system. That's pretty much from Guadalupe North in units 3 and 4, 3B. And so every project that was proposed to be above that line, you know, back around here in these areas, was supposed to originally in the old plan be tied into these systems here. This is a 1.2 million gallon tank, and as it stands right now in high summer demand times, you know, when we're 100 plus degree heat and everybody's irrigating, the district at one point, I believe around the 90s, I can't even find paperwork on it, it's very odd, but did something, a project where they put in a pipeline from this tank down to the upper reaches of the gravity zone. So there's higher portions of the gravity zone that in time where this tank, which is a 3 million gallon tank, gravity feeds to feed units 6 across the Yellow Bridge and, you know, the village and the commercial area and then units 1 and 2. These upper portions of unit 2, which this is unit 2, get very low pressures. So they put in a pipeline on a check valve system that when there's high demand over here, that check valve is going to open up and supplement water into the upper portions of unit 2. And how that works is this tank's exactly 10 feet higher than this tank, and when they're kept full, the head pressure of this tank is keeping that check valve closed. It's just if there's a lot of demand, everybody's using water, showering, irrigating, etc., there's enough of a pressure drop and pressure constraints, you know, flow constraints through the distribution system that this valve's supplementing the upper portions of the district here. And so this tank in summertime, you can literally watch it drop. So I conveyed those concerns to Coastland. And, you know, the need
and the
for, yeah, for a full water study as it relates to their project to demonstrate how they're going to meet fire flow demand, assuming that that tank's going to be used.
So they submitted a static model of the system. And right on the front page, I understand they referenced the previously existing dynamic model that another engineer, a prior engineer, had done. And they were wanting to get a copy of that dynamic model because that's really the way to take a look at the system. I believe they were using HydroCAD, I'm not sure, H2O or HydroCAD, yeah. And so might be a good idea to make sure we make efforts to get that model from, if it still exists, from McKay and Somps.
I've requested everything from McKay and Somps, and they have given me what they have. It's limited. They do have some old water modeling. I think if they had nothing for sewer, they had something for water. It wasn't super useful, but we can certainly provide what we have.
Okay, well then, you know, I guess, you know, the comment still remains then, you know, a dynamic model may have to be done for the system.
Great.
You know?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And who have you been, sidebar, at McCain Sumps, I'll just, who have you been talking to at McCain Sumps, do you know?
Was it Paul Hart?
Yes.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
All right. Okay.
All right. Any questions on that or moving on?
And in this particular one, I'm going to suggest that we ask for, you know, because there's so many updates here, are there any public comments on that particular item? Okay, then moving on.
All right. So no update on the Highway 16 offsite improvements on Lot 4 and 5. Some work's proceeding as it relates to that project. So just fire hydrants getting installed, shown on the photograph there, with Coastland providing the inspection services on that. On the Murrieta Marketplace, not a lot going on there as well. And we just need to cover the landscape plan, so as part of the recycled water system, we need to ensure that they install everything per our recycled water standards, and then give us an accounting for what their assumed demands are going to be. And Lot 10, we have comments back from Coastland into them. Same thing with Lot 11, and no word back from either project yet. On the infrastructure for Murrieta Gardens, it's still outstanding. No punch list has been called for yet. A punch list will basically start the process of calling for the project being complete. The FAA Business Park, I have no update from when I wrote this memo, but recently, the good weather, they've just turned the soil over there. There was good soil moisture, so they were just doing a little bit of work on that project, and they hope to get going soon. On the Riverview project, got the deposit in with, where the developer has a deposit in with the district and has requested some work. Work being that we do fire flow testing over there on the south portions of the system. So we flow tested two hydrants and gave the information back to the developer's engineer, as well as provided all the as-built sheets of where their potential tie-ins are, and so they can use those for development of their plans. And they're looking to potentially build some homes in the spring over in that area, but they also have a lot of grading work to do there. And verbally, they conveyed that they're looking to, if they proceed on the project, they intend on grading the entire site at one time and then just building a portion of it at a time. So I believe they think that's the most cost-effective way for them to proceed as it relates to that project.
Is that just the grading, not the underground?
Correct, yep. So okay. There's a lot of soil movement to be done over there.
Is that another one that certainly would benefit from a dynamic model of the water system, but it, because it's so old, may not be required. So
the tank from the 3 million right. gallon tank mm-hmm. is been designed early back in the 90s to be able to supply the entire south. So they did do some project that tank, when it was built, would be able to supply the entire south without any issues.
I understand. I'm just, you know, thinking of the idea of new modern, you know, more modern design standards require modeling three fire flows in three different locations in an area, and so again, that's a dynamic.
We don't just model them; we go and do them. So
no, what I mean is, you know, under peak demands. Mm-hmm. Peak domestic demands, and then three fire flows on three separate areas. So mm-hmm. that's okay. Never mind.
Yep.
That's an old design and should be adequate.
And when plans are submitted, Sac County Fire is going to be one of the commenting agencies on it.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll
okay.
dot the I's and cross the T's on those.
Mm-hmm.
Residences in Murrieta Hills. board got an update from the developer at the last board meeting.
Mm-hmm. I want to speak to that. So we've, you know, there was an implication that nothing's been done on that. There's been a ton done on that. What happened in 2014 when that document was signed by the district, it obligated the district to engage EPS, which is an economic and planning systems, to serve as the fund manager for that financing and service agreement, the 670, which covers a lot of the parcels behind the gates. The district did not engage EPS on that. So there is a lack of clarity on the accounting that's been done up to now on that project, on both the Van Vleck spray fields and also the water treatment plant reimbursements. A considerable amount of time has been spent in the last number of months trying to research through our accounting systems, through our files, communications with two prior GMs on this, trying to get some ground truth as to what was done in the past and why. The Van Vleck accounting was done completely external to this organization through private entities, and so we are doing what we can to have to find out how we can obtain that information. I have engaged EPS to become the fund manager. We're going to be working through the contract. They were in discussions yesterday, and they're going to start that role as fund manager. Had a discussion with Ed Krause yesterday, a conference call, to see, you know, to gather further information from him. So I've had communications. We've been working on this considerably over the last number of months. There's, you know, this is one of many things that we have on our plate. Mm-hmm. And so that implication that there wasn't anything being done is absolutely false. It's a very tough thing to unwind. Our own attorneys have said that.
And that, I think that's an important part. You had legal review.
A lot of players have changed, yes. It is where the calls yesterday were with our legal team, among other calls. The information, let me step back. In 2014, when this document was signed, the players have changed more than once on a number of properties. Mm-hmm. So even that, knowing who the players are, we have title reports now for all the current landowners. We need to work with EPS so that they can understand what has transpired in the last number of years. It even took a month just to be able to have a reasonable conversation with EPS just to discern whether or not they were ever engaged as the fund manager. Just the back and forth, we just could not get, we were trying to have that discussion, a verbal discussion as to, and they were researching on their side. So it seems like this is just, you know, instant stuff. You just add water and things happen. It's not that simple.
Nope.
So I think we're proceeding in the best manner we can at this point. Mm-hmm. I also met with the county last Friday, and the representations are that there's a reduced impact on those lots. Their understanding is, you know, there's 4 20-acre lots that are being proposed under and no application's been given to the district at this point
just
either.
Just a preliminary discussion.
But if the impression is that those 4 20-acre lots are going to remain 20-acre lots, that's not necessarily the case. Those lots can be sold off and subdivided into further units and parcels. So the implication that the impact will be lesser than the original 99 lots, not necessarily the case. It could turn out that the full development capacity could be realized. And so there's a obvious intent to argue that the impact of this potential development is less than what it was represented under the current vesting tentative map, and I would say we have to be cautious to accept that.
And yeah, I would, it'd be in my opinion that I would concur in that, because right now that vesting tentative map is the only legal planning document. The preliminary application wasn't even a preliminary application that's on the county's website. It is nothing more than a discussion topic.
And the county is very aware of the potential ultimate development of that site to the full capacity. And they also, although they, you know, are not the ultimate decision makers on this, they say it would be very tough for that parcel to walk back from its other obligations as far as roadway improvements and other impacts of development. So it's not just on our side here.
No, it's regional fees
FSA,
as well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And
is there a possibility that that could be rezoned to 20-acre parcels and tie him into that and everybody get back on the same page there? I think the
obligations, what we were just speaking to, the regional obligations are already committed to under the vesting tentative map, the obligations under the FSA that obligates them to pay the 99-unit EDU share of the water treatment plant expansions and other obligations would make it very difficult for them to be able to do that.
So at the board meeting, I got the impression that the agreement itself was very hard to interpret what the intent was, that legal was still looking at it and there's sort of kind of a hands up in the air thing going on. I don't know what this says. Are we very clear about
there's two parts that, at least two steps that are occurring. One is a legal interpretation of, is this parcel subject to the general concept of they have to meet the obligation that was there at the time the document was signed? And so would they be fully obligated to the 99 units water treatment plant expansion, yes or no, generally? Are they obligated to the Van Vleck spray field and landowner irrigation facilities obligations, yes or no? That's the first part, and that there's a letter that'll be out within a week.
The answer is
likely yes. Well, no, the answer will be yes. We haven't finalized the letter yet, and so I'm not prepared to, until we actually land on the final letter, to say that. But right now, it's pretty darn clear. That's one thing that is, I think, clear about the document. The second part is the financials behind it. What is that exact level of obligation? Within the 670 FSA, there that was at a time before even the ultimate cost of the water treatment plant expansion was known. It was speaking to a $6 million obligation. However, it obligated the landowners to the ultimate cost of the water treatment plant. That plant ended up costing, with cost overruns, over north of $13 million. So it's trying to sort out, now with that expansion, what is that new obligation? There is an allocation of a percentage of the 670 group, of the residences east, of the percentage within the 670 group, what their fair share is of the 670 group's obligation. But sorting out what are the final dollars on the water treatment plant expansion with cost overruns, and then is that based on the interpretation of the 670 FSA, does it apply? Do those same percentages apply, basically, as far as obligation and to whatever ultimate amount? It's extremely complicated, and we're just working through it. Is the best I can tell you.
So what is going to be addressed in this letter?
The letter will be addressed the general question of if they are obligated to the full amount, as obligated under the original
of both agreements. Both costs.
The Van Vleck and the
treatment.
And then there's 3 years left on that vesting tentative map, the current vesting tentative map, because I think it was reviewed in...
I think that's where it is right
now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it was extended in... 2 years ago, to a 5-year vesting tentative map. So that's the legal land use for that particular parcel, all of those parcels.
So so that's it, unless there's other questions on the residences east. I did want to take a step back and go to Rancho Marietta North. So I also had a discussion with the county on Rancho Marietta North. They have, we are getting mixed messages from the developer and the county. The county has stated that project is not moving forward at the county and being actively reviewed. In fact, if you go online, their project is shown as on hold by the county. That is not what's been represented to us by the developer. So we are in a review process right now. It has been stated to the developer that we will, you know, the in any review that we do, if there's further review, they're going to be obligated to pay for those costs, because if a project changes for whatever reason, mm-hmm. it's going to require a full re-review of their project mm-hmm. From an engineering standpoint and facility standpoint. So I'm not really pleased, to be honest, that I don't believe that we haven't been told the truth on this. They need to be very upfront with us as to the status of their project. But mm-hmm. it is what it is at this point. Mm-hmm. And I'll leave it at that.
The last update we had said that they had drainage plans submitted and now not?
With the representation that the county was actively
reviewing
their project.
Was not the case.
And which is not
so
the case.
So those plans were not submitted to the county, they were just submitted to
So
us.
Here's what's been done out here, and so this is my conversation with the county was, does the county, the way that Rancho Murrieta CSD review has been operating over the years, is this process done anywhere else in the county? The answer was no. So what I'm going to do from here on out is give direction that we're going to follow proper process. Proper process is that any developer submits land use entitlement plans to the county. The county is the quarterback. They are the hub of mm-hmm. a hub and spoke system. Mm-hmm. It is up to the county to refer documents to us. Wow. In the past, what has happened is plans have been dropped off here and we're told things. We're told, oh yeah, they're reviewing it. That's gonna stop now. Mm-hmm. And so they'll be required to submit those plans to the county. The county will be very aware of what's been submitted. It's up to them to refer to us. They will refer the documents to us. We're not going to accept documents from, you know, dropped off here. They're gonna be actually physically provided to us if they're in paper form or electronically conveyed to us by the county. It's at that point that then we will have an obligation to review. What typically happens in a review process, if that project is on hold, the county wouldn't even necessarily refer those documents to us for review, because they'll know that why would we want you to review these plans if the project could change in the future? It's not very productive to do that. So the other thing is, as far as comments back, et cetera, the comments will be, once referred to us, we will comment back to the county as a commenting entity, and it's up to the county whether to disclose those comments or not. Mm-hmm. That's the way it's done. That's the professional way to do it, and the county fully agreed
exactly.
to this.
Exactly.
So we're going to adhere to standard practice from here on out. Mm-hmm.
And you know, one of the catches to that process is that while the outside consultant's time and costs might be accounted to the developer, the requesting entity for the review, there's a lot of internal cost that on a day-by-day basis from the standpoint of managing things like that, that's not necessarily accounted to that.
Absolutely.
And so it's a loss to the district.
Correct.
And so that's an important factor to be providing reviews on projects that may change. Once again, we're not recovering full costs.
Correct. There is a significant.
But we are recovering direct costs because there's
for the engineering review.
The engineering,
yes.
Right.
There's a
reimbursement agreement.
Yeah, and we have a fund set up for that. That there's money
available.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Mm-hmm.
So there's two things that need to happen. We have to get these drawings from the county, and the money has to be sitting there.
The other practice that is going to cease is having our electeds involved in review of draft documents. That is a commingling of the decision makers with the administration of the district. And really, that's something that before I walked into this office, it was something that was done prior, and with the understanding of technical expertise perhaps being lent, et cetera, it's a slippery slope, in my opinion, and it is not a good practice to have those that are decision makers involved in the day-to-day operations of the district. That is the purview of the general manager of the district and of the staff to not be influenced by others while they're supposed to be under objective review. And so that is also going to cease. In the past, we did have involvement. Some documents were released. The proper entity to release those documents is the county in this case, which is the land use authority. And so if that's the decision of the county, that's their decision to release that information. So a few corrective practices.
Okay, that covered a number of topics, but are there any? Is there any public comment on that? Then moving on.
All right, going on to the district projects at the water plant, number one, effluent pump replacements. The order for the pumps is in, mm-hmm. and the manufacturer noted it's 12 to 14 weeks before delivery. So we've got another bit of while before those show up. On the water rights renewal, I got the draft petition back with a lot of blanks there, requesting me to fill out a lot of information, so that's on my to-do lists. As previously conveyed, they said we're really ahead of the process as it stands right now, and I'm going to endeavor to get this done as soon as possible. However, I've got annual reports and two senior staff guys out, one retired, one's out for an unknown period of time at this point, so I'm getting backed up with work a little bit. And on the recycled water and untreated water study fee, we met with, as a full staff here, administration staff, with ClearSource Financial Consulting. On the raw untreated water rate, it's going to be pretty cut and dry. They're going to consolidate that into one single rate, make it simple for the district and for all the vendors that we end up supplying raw water to. However, he did mention on the recycled water things, it's a bit early for the development of a recycled water rate, as we don't have a set amount designated with the Rancho Murrieta Country Club. Right now, it's they get the first right of refusal for recycled water, but no specified amount, and that's really hard to account for if there's no set number. So Mark's mentioned several times that the agreement's coming due with the assumption it's just going to get rolled forward. However, we need to work with the country club and set a rate, a fixed amount with the country club for delivery.
Not a
Otherwise,
rate, an amount.
Yeah. And they also have, riparian rights to the river as well, so mm-hmm. we can factor these type of things in and try to come to some sort of agreement as we move forward on this. And then another factor potentially is I've got that CIAP project lingering out there where I was looking to potentially capture stormwater to supplement our recycled water storage system so that we have more water available for recycled water delivery within that system. So,
and then as part of those discussions with the country club, trying to get a good, clear handle as much as possible on their future land uses as well. And good, I mean, they're coming up with a lease renewal in 21, I think. 2020, next year, a lease renewal. Maybe it's 26. And so you want to...
28.
Okay, well, so the point is just have that as a sub-note. Mm-hmm. In the comments, or in
and just if I could on that, the agreement that we have on the recycled water, both parties would have to agree to discontinue the path that we're already on. So, just making sure that's clear.
Right.
And then on the chlorine gas to sodium hypochlorite conversion project, I put a picture in there. It shows a bit of work we have done. We removed two of the old chemical feed tanks there, and you can see that wall that's around the tanks. That's a secondary containment wall. Within that wall, we have to build another wall to contain one side from the other, as they're different, you know, one's an acid, one's a base, so you don't want those mixing if there's a spill by any means. And then you can see on the ground, there's a chemical feed trench that was just stopped at one point, and it didn't continue to the point of where the tie-ins are at. So at this point, I would figured it'd make sense to continue that on so we can have a clean routing of chemical feed lines and for future maintenance. So staff's working to get that done. And then the tanks are on order from the last board meeting. We hope to get those by next month. So we've got a lot of work that we're going to try to scramble to get done before those tanks arrive, because we're hoping, you know, that we can just then set them in place rather than put them on the ground and have to set them later.
Is there a coating on those concrete containment walls?
As it stands right now, no.
But is that part of the plan?
No, we didn't anticipate doing that. We were looking to not to do the walls themselves, but the floor to about a foot up.
That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Floor and walls 1 foot up. That's great.
And another thing we need to do is tie into a potable water supply source so that we can have a fill for one of the tanks that's going to be a dilution tank. So as I conveyed earlier, that once you get the product in as a high-strength product, you want to dilute it down to a point where it's stable, because at its high strength, it will off-gas and the strength of it will dissipate. So basically, the chemical you pay for will just essentially just kind of peter out, and you don't want to do that. So a lot of districts suggested that you have a dilution tank where you can put this down to around a 5 to 6% strength solution where it stays stable and feed it from there. So we're plugging away on that project. Also recently, from updating this, within our chemical feed room, we've cleaned out a lot of the old equipment that sits in that room, and I'll hopefully have some updated pictures for the board meeting, the work that's being done there. At the Chesbro Reservoir site, we have put in the fencing around the facility down to the water line, so when we start filling the reservoir back up, that fencing will extend down into the water to keep people out of that area. And as I mentioned in the packet here, just to help reinforce the need for what we're doing out there, you could see two of the aeration pods were just yanked way off to the left that we had recently installed this past summer. And so I was asking staff, what's going on over there? And they're like, yes, the raw water coming into the plant's a lot dirtier. What's going on? It looks like a boat anchor was drugged through there and hooked onto the aerator lines, drugged these pods way off where they should be, turned them on its side, and so they're, instead of putting
churning
air up into the water, it's just churning up the dirt. And so staff recovered a boat anchor when pulling the lines back in to reset them. So this shows the need for it, let alone fishing hooks and whatnot caught up in those things.
Is there an advantage at some point in time for a public article on this project and this process?
So Amelia did put something in the pipeline, I think, back in December, but we can try to do some more
additional
outreach,
including, you know, there's a lot of folks still, turning to social media, electronic social media as well, so maybe we ought to.
I believe most of the fishing clubs probably not in that group, but
Well, maybe
our army to post some signage maybe at the boat ramp, so it's very clear that in case you can't see what's in front of you, you can see where you're launching.
Right. And maybe an outreach presentation to the fishing club.
Yep, we can work with that too.
Okay.
Did we do the fence in-house, or did we?
No, we contracted that out.
Who did that?
It was Crusader that. That's it for the updates.
All right.
And one last thing on the Rancho Mirada North. So a request has come in about the drainage plans themselves, and it is up to the county to release those or not. They have placed those plans. The draft plans that were submitted are available online through the county website. Mm-hmm. So as far as we are concerned, those are public documents for review. Mm-hmm. So they are available publicly at this point. The plans
and
stuff.
And we don't know
submitted.
The differences between the two versions of what's on the county website versus what was submitted.
You would have to assume that's what was in...
which is a point that...
They would be obligated to...
Right. We need to be cognizant of.
Correct.
See, in case they made any changes to the submittal they requested.
But we don't technically care anymore because we're on hold as far as checking anything until we get from the county.
We have to have that discussion with the developer at this point.
Right.
Ideally, the county should have instructed us to hold.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they're the quarterback on this stuff. And so... have it represented to us, you know, and we went in good faith, understood from the developer that the county was actively reviewing their application.
But my point is, we're stopped.
I think
we're
at this point it would make sense for us to hold
them from the county.
Correct.
And
I think that's wise.
And provide notice to the developer of that
what we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Go ahead.
The exhibit shown in the packet as well is from what we tried to have for last month's board meeting. It's this drawing here.
Oh, yeah.
Provided by the developer,
mm-hmm.
showing where they wanted to have an access to the commercial site next to the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had hoped to have this at the last meeting, so it shows the access drive from the commercial, a very difficult to access parcel, and we expressed at the last meeting initial serious concerns that we have about the operations of our district vehicles
mm-hmm.
at a very short stacking distance to that location. We would have to be able to influence those that control the signalization of that intersection. This is going to be something that the district really needs to consider seriously before we allow that access.
Well, in addition to that, if that became a public access, then in reality, again, it's county planning and county departments to consider prior to us considering it. The turning radii and things like that from a commercial property may not be per standards. It's a 50-foot, it's shown as 50-foot, and we don't know whether that's right or not. We don't know whether the radii of those turns are appropriate or anything.
So there's loading concerns, just driving out of at the intersection right now as the signals are set, the traffic turning westbound from the south mm-hmm. part portion of the community, they have priority on the free right. So that is oftentimes stacked with residents leaving the community. So even if we have a green coming out of our drive, we have to wait mm-hmm. by traffic law mm-hmm. for those people to clear and head westbound before. And usually there's three or four cars that are turning right at that point.
Yep.
So and whoever controls that signal would have to be extremely comfortable with extending that signal timing mm-hmm. for those movements and possibly even creating two signal movements dedicated to each direction. So meaning that those coming out of the south would have to have its own signal motion and then traffic leaving our drive would have to have its own motion. And that deducts from the time that's available for the through traffic traveling on Highway 16, both directions.
And so again, that's all part of a proposed tentative map, right, from Marietta North. I believe that's the case. Those four parcels, right now it's one parcel. One, two, three, four, and the proposal for four parcels I don't think has been...
Yeah, I haven't seen that proposal.
I think it's part of Rancho Marietta North tentative map, or the land plan. All right, it does show.
Yeah,
it's part of the planning document.
So there is something that was envisioned a while back. And what's been represented to us from the developer directly is they really aren't sure how they're going to develop that parcel.
And I think that's
so
important.
I guess focusing on what is there now is, it sounded to me, and I thought they were somewhat representing that whatever parcel layout is there
There's one parcel.
Is expected now that it's likely to change.
This whole thing is one parcel. Yeah. Anyway, that's what's on the county map, all right? Mm-hmm. County map, parcel map. And so, again, the question is, it's a land planning issue, and any impacts related from that land planning issue needs to go through the county first.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right, is there any other further discussion on that? Moving on to item four then, discuss RMA pedestrian bridge parcel conveyance.
Could you
update.
Speak to the, just the work being done on the
bridge. So the parcel bridge conveyance, what we have done so far is we have survey proposals for conveying the easements. Next step will be getting a title company in order to convey the property. In fact, Mark, I'd hope to get this out to you yesterday, but obviously I did not. But I have a, will be providing a summary of the next steps necessary in order to wrap it up and approximation of costs involved and whatnot. So that's where that stands.
And we continue, you know, we've got some research documents, but I'd like to find more information on what led up to that.
And I'm guessing questions.
Just have not had capacity to continue on that.
Yeah, understand. All right, any further discussion on that item? All right, moving on to the groundwater sustainability plan.
So we had a thorough discussion at the last board meeting about this proposal that SRCD, Slough House Resource Conservation District, had to absorb the Rancho Marietta area that's currently under the SCGA for groundwater sustainability authority and plan. What I've discovered since that meeting is that that was fully the SRCD made that choice.
Driven by them.
They did not communicate with the district, which they were obligated to do as part of that proposal. And so this is solely their desire to obtain authority over that portion of the district's groundwater. Mm-hmm. And as recommended in the last meeting, I even now more so recommend that the district remain, as far as that portion of the district, with the SCGA, because then we have a voice on that board. We would not have a voice on the SRCD board, because it would be a little ridiculous for us to sit on that board if we have other authority and other responsibilities that we don't want to entangle ourselves in, mm-hmm. Of a much larger area outside the district. So it would make sense to stay with the SCGA for that portion of the district. It is still possible, however, we would be obligated to pay some fair share of the groundwater sustainability plan development for the Cosumnes River area, which Slough House Resource Conservation District is over right now. And so it's a matter of just getting clarity on that. I have attempted to find when the meeting for the working group that was created on trying to resolve all this, and there's no transparency on that. So I'm continuing to communicate with individuals, and I thought there'd be a meeting at the end of the month, and Slough House Resource Conservation District, even their website doesn't provide very basic information that they're obligated to provide. So I'm continuing to work on that. I do have a SCGA meeting, special meeting next Wednesday, so I'll be talking to the executive director of that. And the president of the SCGA right now, who's from Folsom, I believe, sits on that working group. So I'll engage them as to making sure that we have a seat at that table, at least are able to attend those meetings to see what's going on.
And Rancho Marietta would be one of the few urbanized areas that would be within SRCD, which leads to the question of funding proportionality. That might be a reason that they're looking at including Rancho Marietta in their district. So,
because there's about 700 homes or so that are in that area.
Mm-hmm. So who has the final say?
Well, it's really interesting. We're supposed to have a say. Mm-hmm. They and not. It may come down to a legal question, is the best way I can put it. I've asked that question myself. It's really not clear, honestly. I think the fact that we have not been involved in the process as we were supposed to, that we have a very strong legal standing, and I
I think if we really put our foot down, that it would be unwise for them to challenge us if we wish to remain with the SCGA for that area. So just to be real clear as to the boundaries and all that, so the SCGA area is essentially up to here, and it's this, it really is a line that cuts off the western portion of the groundwater basin, and it is the limits of the groundwater basin itself. The rest of it is fractured rock water sources for groundwater and wells. The west of here essentially is the SCGA area. This is an area that's just fractured rock, so it's not subject to the Groundwater Sustainability Agency of responsibility or the responsibility for development of the plan. And then everything south of the Cosumnes River, essentially, that's within the district, falls. And then there's also a squiggly line that's mm-hmm. the groundwater extent here that falls within the Cosumnes River or Cosumnes base, sub-basin that SRCD, Slough House Resource Conservation District, is responsible for. So this is the portion that would fall into, and we may have some fiscal obligation to that group also.
All right, thank you for the update.
Yeah, I'll keep you updated as I learn more information.
Okay, and having a seat on the SCGA, while it might be small, it is an opportunity for a voice to be heard. So,
and it also forces us to stay involved on the topic, which is critical.
Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on to item number 6, discuss previous year's flooding on South Course.
So over the years, there's been flooding on the golf courses and, mm-hmm. you know, in the community with the heavy rain events we've had. So Director maybe requested that I get in contact with the country club to share my institutional knowledge of flooding incidents with them. I'll show you on the board. Here's back 2017, mm-hmm. Photograph of the the golf course at hole 10, between hole 10 and 11. You can see their pump house is nearly completely underwater.
Right.
And that's the pump station that feeds water to the entire South Golf Course.
Right.
So years and years ago, the country club knew they were susceptible to flooding and had built a minor levee here along the river. It's noted on plans as being a 10-year event levee, whereas we've got our levee system, which extends around here, which is a 100-year levee. Mm-hmm. This is not district property, this is all country club property. When this floods, it comes back up through here, a drainage outfall comes out to the river, and I mean, this whole area will be underwater. Mm-hmm. It's just, can't fight Mother Nature on that point.
Yeah, historically, so it's a 9-year levy.
So there's
86 to 97.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And they have repeated issues there, and so they occasionally will close off the holes as a matter of safety for their membership. Sometimes to the chagrin of their membership, saying they want to have access irregardless. But, you know, it is what it is, basically. And mm-hmm. so I have a meeting scheduled tomorrow with the country club to just cover that and other operational concerns that I've had over the years that we need to coordinate on. So,
again, providing them background information only.
I thought you did this about a year ago. Didn't you meet with them about a year ago?
They changed staff quite a bit over there, so.
So this is it. So you met with the old staff, now you're meeting with the new staff.
Yes.
I walked that, after we talked about it, mm-hmm. I walked that that 9-year levee to try and figure out how the water got from the river over, and I still was never able to figure out where the low spot was and where the water's getting through. A guy would have to be actually out there when it's flooding to
I think it's seeping through. I don't see any over
it actually
over the top erosion or anything.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of drainage shed that comes down from where, you know, the Van Bleck property is on that hillside, which is future Lakeview development area.
Mm-hmm.
There's been concerns that potentially that drainage somehow ties into Lake 11 and force feeds it underground.
Yeah, I did see that. I did see mm-hmm. the water coming out of the hillside. There's mm-hmm. a ditch along there,
mm-hmm.
and then the cart bath, and it looks like there's water going through there. But I didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't. That levee you're talking about over from the river. I can't see where the water's coming from there.
Yeah.
Next time it floods, I'm going to take a hike over there.
Well, it'd be probably a good idea to refer to Army Corps of Engineers HEX-2 analysis on the river flood as well. You know, I mean, that's a matter of record, flood study record, and should be available. So HEC-RAS really, I don't know if they've updated it or not, but.
We've got all that data from when we built the pedestrian bridge, all of the map water curves and everything through there.
So other opportunities of information. Okay, is there anything else, any other comments on that item? All right, moving on then, discuss Residence East and 670 FSA. I think we already covered that.
Addressed that largely.
Okay.
A request did come from Bob Kyle for a definitive schedule.
Who is the owner of East.
And right now my response back to him was, you know, at this point it would be unproductive to try to generate one because there's still a lot of questions that need to be answered. We're diligently working through the process. Once we have EPS on board and we have some clarity as to, and we've already had a lot of the preliminary discussions on what we have to tackle to get an answer, then we can likely provide some type of schedule at that point. But right now, it would just be an absolute guess. I'm being honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
So to provide an artificial schedule based on a lack of clarity is not wise.
Mm-hmm. Just so I'm clear, this letter that's going to come out next week, which possibly, most likely is going to say yes, yes to both questions.
Yeah.
At that point, then it's just a matter of determining how much.
Yeah.
Just sitting down and crunching the numbers.
What the numbers would be and what that obligation is. And that's important to have for all the other development properties.
And that's going to be done by
that area.
Someone that we're hiring.
EPS. And we have the authority under that FSA to assess all the current property owners for that obligation.
That are party to the FSA.
The district is.
As the parcels change hands, the original document says and successors or.
Yes, absolutely. Successors and interests.
Then
what's even more interesting is you have developments such as Retreats West, which is already developed. And what occurred there as that was developed?
Mm-hmm.
What clarity was provided them? What share was paid towards water treatment and spray field? And so all of this has to be sorted out.
So in the past, we have dropped the ball on this, and now you're playing catch-up. I get it.
All right. And let's move on then to item number 8, approved bid for 2 main south sewage pump replacement. CRP item, capital replacement plan.
Yes.
And then that is the extra handout. That just came yesterday afternoon.
Finally got a good bid yesterday. So, at the Mainland South Sewer Pump Station, which is within the levee of the South community, that pumps all the sewage from the South community over here to the wastewater facility for treatment. It receives sewage from the Preston Green sewer lift stations as well as gravity flow from portions of the South community. There are 2 20-horsepower pumps in service there. They're very old. They've been rehabbed several times, and to the point where it's cheaper to replace them than it is to just take them out of service, mm-hmm. put in a bypass system or a temporary pumping system, and then put the rehab pumps back in again. So mm-hmm. it's just cheaper. Same thing with like the water treatment plant pump replacements. It's cheaper to just have new pumps available that you can pull the old ones out, put the new ones in within the day, and then you don't have to pay for, you know, 10 to 20 grand for a bypass system mm-hmm. that get shipped and installed and put in place and removed, etc., while you're waiting for a pump to get rehab. So that's the direction I'm requesting the improvements committee proceed on this. We do have a bid here in the packet, which is updated, and it's from Uniquip, which is the direct supplier for the hydrostall pumps, which is a direct replacement for those pumps that are in there. This is a single bid request. We're requesting this as kind of an emergency because one of the pumps there isn't functioning at 100% right now. It's actually a little less than 50%. And so it's a little complicated to explain, but basically the pumps fit in certain type of systems. There's a rail system that you put pump. These pumps on, and then it guides it down and makes it fit for a discharge point into the sewer system for forced main discharge.
It yep. seats.
That's exactly how it does it. Mm-hmm. It rides down these rails and then seats in mm-hmm. that discharge. To get other manufacturers to do it, they have to fabricate something to make it fit within this standard, and then it could be tremendously expensive and time consuming as well. So basically I got a call back yesterday with this bid that lead time would be about 5 weeks. So that's pretty darn good. So within 6 weeks potentially we could swap out the bad pump there and then have a good pump sitting on the shelf. And we always have to have a spare because at mm-hmm. all our force main stations, they're critical. You cannot have any downtime with them.
And is there any best time scheduling for that replacement, low flow potential?
So when we do that, we do have one pump in operation at the time when the other pump's being pulled. So
which is adequate.
Yep. Okay. Unless of course, you know, and then there's INI, which is intrusion and infiltration. Right. So if there was a storm event,
that's
something major going on, then
that's
would have
my concern.
To postpone it.
But so it's just something to consider as far as the timing of the mm-hmm. replacement goes. If they can last for a little time, a while until, you know, INI is low, potential is low, and you know, you got peak, peak flows. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as everything stands right now, the most cost-effective way to proceed is as I've presented it. Mm-hmm. Leave the bad pump in place, let it peter around on a lag. Mm-hmm. So you've got a pump that's in lead, a pump in the lag, so it's mm-hmm. there available mm-hmm. as a backup.
Okay. Are there any other questions on that? Then I would move to approve it and forward it to the board at the next meeting.
Agreed.
Okay.
Thank you. This next item before you is the consider of approval of the Bobcat tractor replacement.
Can I back up one point on this issue, on the last one? Mm-hmm. Do we have a CRP reference number on this capital
no.
replacement
no,
number?
No, it's being done on their emergency.
Okay,
but
would it
come from reserve funding? Mm-hmm.
But it, so was it? What did we have it as part of the?
No.
Cal. Okay. So it wasn't identified in the last 2015 study.
No.
Okay.
It's not.
All right. Thank you. Sorry. Go ahead.
When you say the reserve study, or not, or in the budget?
Oh, the CRP.
No, it wasn't in the CRP budget.
Okay. All right.
So this next item before you is for a budgeted project to replace our existing Bobcat tractor with a new one. It's utilized as a loader to load materials back here at our wastewater facility where materials are kept for sand and aggregate for backfill on water projects and sewer projects, as well as for managing the wastewater drying beds for the biosolids that get dug and pushed around there to facilitate drying and then for loading. Mm-hmm. Our older one it's a 1993 model, obviously very old. Mm-hmm. And its hydraulic pumping system that's within it leaks very badly, so we tried to limit its use. We requested through multiple vendors and even private contractors to see if there's a way they could fix it. We got an absurd cost to somebody would actually have to manufacture a hydraulic system from scratch because this has no longer been supported for, like, I don't know, 12 years or something ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're looking for a new cost option. And then also the new cab would have air conditioning within the cab. For those of you who are aware, within safety programs, the state requires e-illness prevention programs, so having air conditioning on any sort of outdoor equipment's very good to have now, so no one's stressed from the heat within the heat illness prevention program. And then we're also requesting that an attachment be included with this, which is called a flail mower. What it is it's a device that spins and has chains which whip around and knock down brush and weeds. The old unit came with a flailer that was utilized until it failed. We're requesting we have the same thing because if you look around our wastewater facility on the aerial photograph and mm-hmm. around our dams and the levees and whatnot, if we have something like this, it will save a lot of time as it relates to weed control. And then you don't have to worry about somebody getting bit by a snake or anything messing around mm-hmm. these high grass areas. So the cost is, we solicited costs from three vendors. The lowest cost came back from John Deere. We're requesting that we proceed with that one from Valley Truck and Tractor Inc.
Sounds like you got plenty of usage out of the old one.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And given that this is a bid, there's no reason for a contingency. So it's a single number cost. And then referencing the capital replacement project estimate was $65,000. And I think all that does is highlight the idea that what we need to do in our CRP is have an inflation adjustment factor in our subsequent CRP and CIP plans.
As we do within our
right.
fee plans, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea.
Okay, any other questions, comments on that item? I'm ready to move to approve the purchase and move this forward to the next board meeting.
Agreed.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, on to item number 8, director and staff comments. Staff first. Any further comments?
No further comments.
I had 2 or 3 comments, I can't remember the comments, and I can't access my comments because I can't remember my passwords.
Oh, no.
I think I'll just let those pass.
Well, shoot, I was really open to stay.
But at least you remembered that.
I think so. That's my recollection anyway. Okay. With that, I will request a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All right, second. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you.